You're listening to Sex the Podcast, and this is episode number
10.
Welcome. Today we have an interview with Dr. Shannon Chavez, who is a nationally recognized expert, therapist, and educator who specializes in all things sexuality. She's a licensed clinical psychologist in California and Arizona, and she has her private practice here in Los Angeles, California, where she works with individuals and couples to address sexual concerns and build sexual awareness through therapy, coaching, and education.
I think Dr. Chavez literally is the coolest sex therapist I've ever met.
She was really cool.
She's just so down to earth and is on the pulse of a lot of different things happening around sex and sexuality and working with the whole range, age range, different identities and associations.
Different religious backgrounds.
Oh yeah, and I loved what she said, that that's kind of an area that's really near and dear to her heart, the sex education for conservative religious and cultural groups, and how different cultures celebrate sexuality and pleasure and sex as well. It was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, we had a ton of fun with her.
In this episode, some of the things we talk about are the new sex trends around gender and sexual identities.
We also talk about how life post-menopause can actually be a woman's golden sexual era.
I love that part of the conversation.
It was really interesting.
And we talk about outer course.
Outer course.
You know, there's inner course and
there's outer course.
And how the entire body is an erogenous zone. Sit back, relax, have a glass of wine or coffee, or if you're driving, focus on the road and have fun hearing Dr. Chavez's really eye-opening and mind-expanding conversation around sex.
Hi. So the way that because we do all these interviews in person, we don't do any of them over the Skype or anything like that.
Okay.
And your space is beautiful. So can you set the scene for the listener and just talk about the room and talk a little bit about the view that we have available to us?
Absolutely. We're here in Miracle Mile, which is a very cool little area in the middle of Los Angeles. And we are surrounded by beautiful views of the Hollywood sign right behind you. You can see it peeking out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got the Griffith Observatory over there on the right. Mm-hmm. And we have so much light in this room.
Yeah.
It's a great room.
Very bright and light in the middle of the city. So
yeah. We had
this is our lovely center, the Shape Center.
Because you were showing us the different rooms, and I walked into this, and I was like, this one.
This is it. I said the same thing when we first saw this space. I go, I gotta have this space. This is where sex therapy has to happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bookshelf to our side that's got lots of books, mostly about sex.
All across the board. Beautiful art.
We had a few non-sex books in there, maybe.
I saw a Timothy Ferris book in there. What's that doing there?
You know that great section on orgasm?
Oh.
Yeah, see?
Because he does. He references
Did you know
close-up
body
was a
sex book?
Yeah, he talks to it.
Plus, I'm a big fan. I love his work and philosophy, and so he's got to be up there.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, so we also have, for listeners, devices. So some devices here. Pleasure devices, as I like to call them, or also known as sex toys. We have over here on the left lubrications and moisturizers and contraception examples and samples and vulva puppets. And Bob, peeking over there to the left, is my penis pillow.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Or neck support. I mean, whatever you decide to do with that is completely up to you. There you go. See?
These
bring
are
that
the
on
times.
My airplane
we'll
the next
a, we'll
time.
We'll take a photo of you.
I was
going to
say, these are the times that I wish it was video recording.
Right.
And I noticed you've got these little marionette dolls over here that I assume you use to kind of just like...
Yes, actually, there's a really interesting story with those.
Okay.
So I was working in a clinic with a primarily Mormon population.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with their sexual beliefs, but there are a lot of restrictions against what you can and cannot view. And so as a sex therapist, part of the cannot was no pornographic material. So for me, I had to be really creative and really think outside of the box and how to teach couples about positions. So I'm thinking, racking my brain, and I think, okay, those art models, they don't have genitals, no breasts, no anything, but I can kind of move their bodies to demonstrate different positions. So I've been using them ever since, and they're actually really great tools.
It seems like it would kind of take some of the charge away from the education piece. It's like they're just these little wooden puppets that kind of androgynous wooden puppets.
Exactly. And as you'll see, a lot of the sex education tools I use here in the office are non-threatening, like the vulva puppets.
Those are
satin, and they're beautiful, and they are, you know, easy to look at. A lot of people have never seen their genitals before, never really took a good look or looked in a book, so we have to start out slowly and kind of build them up to comfort and reducing some of that shame.
Oh, there's so much I want to get into.
Well, so you're telling us about this book up, this one book up on the shelf that was, is that the actual one that was your parents?
Yes, this is the classic historical book.
And so that's a perfect spot to, that's where we start off is, can you tell us the cliff notes of your kind of sexual history? And I think starting with that book sounds like the perfect place to start.
Absolutely. So, you know, most sex educators, therapists will say I've always had a big curiosity around sex, and that's also true for me. I always was curious. It was always something that I knew people were doing, and there were times we were watching television and don't watch, so of course you're curious. What am I supposed to not watch? And then I stumble upon this book in my parents' nightstand called The Joy of Sex, The Famous Joy of Sex by Alex Comfort. And it was one of the first illustrated manuals of sex. Everything from positions to how-tos to making love and all of these references. So as a young person, I think I was about 6 years old. Sorry, Mom! I saw this book and I was fascinated. And I've always been fascinated by sex. I mean, it's the creation of life. It's how we're all here. And what I noticed right away about sex, even at a young age, as a teenager, was, you know, all the negativity around it and all of the fear around it. And I realized, here's something that created all of our lives, but creates so much pain. And where's the pleasure in sex? Nobody's really talking about the pleasure. And I had a lot of comfort talking about sex, whether it was my friends when I was younger or I worked in a clinic very early on in college, working with adults around sex. It was comfortable for me to talk about it and to also extract some of those feelings around it, the fear, the shame, the guilt. And so it became my choice of career. I worked early on in college with a sex therapist. I didn't even know they existed till I met this wonderful woman. I go, ooh, I want to do what you do. This is great. And so she was sort of my first role model into this work. And I've had some amazing mentors, Betty Dotson, Patty Britton, Gina Ogden, all of these women that were really the pioneers at talking about sex in a very positive and empowering way for men and women.
And so it sounds like you said that you chose it, but my words for like the path I'm on is it kind of chose me, and it sounds like that was certainly true for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everywhere I go, sex chooses me. I think, oh, I should have been an interior designer.
This space is pretty gorgeous, yeah.
You know, it just always comes back. So I do believe, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I do believe, you know, everyone has a purpose in life, and so I really feel that sexuality is what I'm here to do, to help people heal around sexuality. One of my small niche areas is working with conservative religious and cultural groups, and so this is a big task to help these groups and these cultures and these populations find sexual healing and to see sex in a different light. So that's I know it's a long road ahead, but I'm willing to do the job, and I love what I do. So it's very a lot of gratitude for this work.
I want to actually go back to that place of what was your sexual journey, not just in the education and the work, because we will definitely weave in and out of that, but I'm so curious about what your personal sexual journey has been.
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in a pretty conservative household, Catholic, Latino household, single mom. So, you know, my first kind of, you know, and gender and sexuality are so intercombined. So I had this very strong, you know, female role model. And my mom was a young mom. She was in her early 20s when I was very young. So she was kind of finding herself and dating. And so I saw all of these things go on. And her messages still, you know, resonate with me, you know. be independent, do what you want, ask for what you want, communicate. So as a young sexual person, exploring, being curious, that's kind of what I was doing. I was asking questions. I wanted to know. I was really open to boyfriends or guys that I was dating, just really being upfront. What was okay and what wasn't okay. So that, for me, was kind of the start, and I became kind of that go-to person because I was open about talking about sex. I didn't see anything wrong with it, even though I grew up in a very conservative household. So people came to me with questions, and I wanted to find out more, and that's sort of how my journey started. And, you know, high school is high school when you're in growing up and dating and exploring, so it was really about, you know, kind of finding myself as a woman and then finding myself in my sexuality and really combining those two elements.
Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a woman and growing up with a single mom, you kind of have to learn to be independent. You know, we spend a lot of time on our own and kind of doing our own thing. And, you know, with sexuality, I didn't have a lot of great sex education growing up. The book, okay. High school health. I was just telling Bob, my high school health teacher is now an abstinence counselor who is an expert in abstinence. And I remember all these messages about sex, very negative messages about sex. So I remember finding my own sexuality and saying, you know, there's nothing really wrong with it. Sexuality feels good. It makes you feel better. It connects you with your body. And that's what I did. I explored my own body. I think I had my first vibrator in high school. I was very open to it. I remember going to these, and there wasn't a lot of shops back then, so going to these shops and getting lingerie or finding things and just really being curious about what there was about sex. I go, wow, sex is fun. This is something that adults aren't talking about. There's all these toys and pleasure objects, and this is really fun. So that was really kind of my way of being open-minded around sex.
So I'm just noticing it tends to be true among like healers and change makers who are doing work in our field, or like therapy or coaching, and just or like healing work in general, that they have a background where they experienced something painful in their life, and then that kind of propelled them toward figuring themselves out, figuring out their challenges, and then eventually supporting other people around those kinds of challenges. But what I'm hearing for you is that although I'm sure you've had challenges, it sounds like it was actually just like a very natural kind of like calling into this, and it sounds like you started like having sex and experiencing your body, and you're like, oh, this feels good, instead of an experience of like, oh, there's so much shame that I've got.
Right, more of a curiosity as opposed to...
Right. I mean, I remember going to my parents and saying, I'm having sex and I need to be on birth control. And mother being in tears and getting a call from grandma and all these things. And I thought, well, here I am being open and honest.
And responsible.
That's kind of what I thought I'm learning around sexuality, is that you have to be upfront and honest and get, you know, there's risks involved. All the things that I was learning about sexuality. But that it caused a lot of pain, you know, for parents who have a growing child. And that I find is one of the most challenging points in sexuality, is that big transition into teenager. And so that was me. You know, I wasn't a challenging teenager, but I was open and honest with parents, where maybe other teenagers are hiding and living these double lives. And that was my way of, you know, my poor mother, I worked her through all these different experiences of just kind of educating her and educating myself at the same time.
What do you think has opened up for you personally as you've been supporting other people in sex and educating them, like for you personally, around either how you see sex or how you relate to sex
or your experience of it?
I think it's broadened my view of sex. You know, sex isn't just something we do, a behavior, an activity. It really is who we are. So I guess I have a more spiritual view on sex.
Okay.
I see sex as sort of the core of our being, and it affects every single element of our life. How we dress, how we talk, how we play, how we dance. And to me, that's really the expansion that happens. And also the acceptance and permission that sexuality evolves every single day. Every single day. Not every month, every year as you get older, but every day in some way. You may feel more playful and frisky one day. You may have no libido, and that's okay.
Right.
And doing this work, you know, you're talking about sex all day, you're helping people's sex lives, you have to take care of your own sex life.
Right.
And your own self and your own sexuality, and that's been something that I've been more aware of. Mm-hmm. People sort of look at you with this lens of, oh, you're a sex therapist, you must be having amazing sex all the time, and the truth is, messy sex, bad sex, no sex, all types of sex happen all the time. And I can admit, that's my life. I'm a human being just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. So that's been my biggest expansion, is just looking at sex from a wider lens and understanding it from all different elements, how it affects life on every single aspect of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How long has it been since you started kind of officially studying this work? It sounds like you paired up with this counselor in college.
Right. I was, in college, I was working as an intern for a sex therapist, and I was an undergrad minor in human sexuality.
Okay.
So
okay.
It was mainly the anthropological views of sexuality. So I kind of had that interest and in spark there. But then life, you know, parents, I was going to go to medical school because, psychology, that's not a real career, be a doctor. So that was my path. I was, you know, working in a hospital. I was on my way to medical school, which actually, that's what brought me here to California, and just had this complete change of heart. I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people, but in a different way.
Yeah.
So I started studying, and even in grad school for psychology, there's minimal education around sexuality. And I thought, how are people going to work with people's lives and marriages and relationships, and they only have one small little course on human sexuality? So then I met Patty Britton, who really changed my view, and I work with her now in this sweet, wonderful woman. And she became my mentor, and so I started studying and researching. I went to seminars and workshops and did my own personal work. Mm-hmm. I went to Betty Dotson's Body Sex Workshop, which is a classic way to really get in tune with your own body image and sexuality, and just started finding my path and way.
Yeah. And so, like, along that lines of like getting more in tune with your body, what's your experience of just not even sex per se, but just of your own body and of your own capacity for pleasure and your own just your own internal experience compared to, I don't know, when you were starting this journey?
Yeah, I think body has been such a huge thing. As a woman, you always are dealing with body image. You know, as a young child, I remember being a little chubbier, not, you know, as thin and slim as some of the other girls. So always a consciousness around my body. And as your body develops, it changes too. And I had that same experience. You know, I want to be skinnier, or I wish my breasts were bigger, or if I was a little bit taller, would I be sexier? And then all these messages that we're bombarded with in our culture that really affect your sexuality. Even if you think you're having a great day, oh, I feel good in my body, I like this dress, I'm amazing, there's still something that lingers and stays with. Yeah. And so having that own experience as a woman helps me with my clients, because I get it. I don't want to have sex. I don't feel good in my body. I don't feel sexy. I don't feel that energy that I want to be connected with my partner. So it just resonates.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy fix, you know. Oh, think positively or lose a few pounds. It's deeply embedded into our psyches. It's also what I call multi-transmissional through generations. Mm-hmm. So if your mom had body image issues, if your grandma had body image issues, more than likely you're going to have those messages in your life. And a lot of them are very subtle. You know, I remember being a little bit chubbier as a child and my mother making comments about how I looked in certain clothing, or don't wear that, it makes your belly look big. And all of these things really get embedded in how you think about yourself. And on an unconscious level, when you're intimate with another person, that is your most exposed place, is here I am now with another person sharing my body, and all those messages flood to the surface, so we have to be able to work through those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Given that, we had talked a little bit before we even started, but just around the important topics you think need to be had, or conversations to be had around sex, and we might get into a couple of them, but I just, in this moment, what comes to mind as far as a conversation you feel needs to be had, or a message that you would want to give to people around sex?
Definitely sex trends and what's happening in our culture, because mm-hmm. I think it's such a big shift. So I'm in my mid-30s.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm seeing this big shift in the younger, you know, late teen, early 20s generation around how they view sexuality. Yeah. You know, I think my generation was pretty open around sex mm-hmm. and independent. We're going to do what we want. But I feel like even this younger generation is bringing in a whole new view on sexuality.
Yeah.
Openness, polyamory, all of these different identifications right. and how they view and present their sexuality. And that's a topic we need to discuss mm-hmm. because a lot of adults are looking at it as, oh, it's a phase or it's this or
right.
that or it's, you know, television's influence. But I think a lot of it really is the shifting and evolving of sexuality. And we have to be aware of how it affects us globally as a group, as a culture. So those are topics that are very heated and controversial because a lot of people have different opinions. So if we start the conversation like we're doing now, we
right.
we bring out some perspective and just bring it into people's awareness to know, you know, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what are a couple of the main topics?
Or trends,
yeah.
I think definitely orientation. So there's new orientations. So there used to be heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, and there are many, many new orientations now, probably more than I could even list here in this podcast
yeah.
because there are new branches and identities and gender identities and sexual identities and how they all vary and how they're the same. And so it's really a really interesting and fascinating area because I learn so much from my clients coming in and saying, I'm this, and this is what I enjoy, and these are my boundaries, this is my where I consent with a partner. And so I learn a lot about, okay, well, maybe this is a really good thing. You have an identity, then you can talk about your identity, and then you can get your needs met. So this could really help
right.
sexual health. Mm-hmm. Then I also think it's not getting out there enough. Mm-hmm. The knowledge of it, you know, as a sex therapist, I'm always reading and learning and exposing myself to these new things, but for the general public, where do we get this information? The news isn't talking about it.
Right.
Magazines aren't talking about it. So it's really important that we educate ourselves and also have a place to go if we have questions.
Right. That's a really good point. And even I, who feel I'm pretty open-minded and I've done my exploration the last couple of years, have been coming into this place of identities and labels and how in some ways it's so expansive to be able to have this whole array of identities and labels that you can associate with. And then there's that other part of me that feels, is that limiting? Is that putting you in a box? Is it just to be able to explain yourself to others that may not understand, you know, and seeing the flip side of basically the limiting aspect of that, but also the expansive place.
Right.
In it.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah,
on?
Our culture is obsessed with labels, and mm-hmm. It really bothers me too. Oh, you're attracted to women, you're a lesbian. Or,
right.
And yeah. I think sexuality is so much more fluid than that, and
yeah.
maybe this younger generation is going to change all that.
Mm. Right.
Because they're going to force us not to be able to label anything.
Right.
It's
they're
have
going to that
go
other
crazy
extreme.
And,
yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. We've got to get rid of the labels. Our
yeah.
culture likes to put everyone in a box.
Right. To be able to understand it. But again, it's I can see both sides. I can see the side that I just want to wrap my brain around what you're doing. Who are you? What do you like? How can I relate to you? But
exactly.
at the same time, it is limiting because, like you said, this generation is totally going to push that boundary,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool, of, no, I'm a human being, period.
Exactly.
That is the end of the
no
conversation.
More questions.
Yeah. No more questions, no more comments. Thank you very much. Yeah. So what is another kind of area I know, and it was fascinating to hear you earlier. It feels like you do touch on so many different
right.
areas and niches and topics as a one. Does it get overwhelming?
You know, I don't know if overwhelming is the word. I guess it would get overwhelming. It does get overwhelming because there's a lot to know. There's
yeah.
a lot changing. There's a lot going on politically, and
yeah.
that really pushes my buttons as far as our sexual rights.
Got
And the fact that people can enjoy what they want to do sexually in a safe place, and that people are getting killed for it. I mean, it really, that's probably the most challenging part in this work, is the pain I see around sex. And you know what I also kind of enjoy about it is the learning and the fun and what people are doing in other cultures. I love to study, you know, what's happening in Tokyo and what's happening in all these different countries. And, you know, right. We are all human beings, but people celebrate sexuality in such different ways. I'm really fascinated by religion and spirituality and sexuality and how they're all intercombined. And I am a big history buff. I think in another career life, I would probably be a historian of some sort, and Egyptian history or all these different cultures. And it's fascinating. I watch all those shows on the History Channel about these ancient cultures and how they had pornography, hieroglyphics on the Egyptian tombs of pornographic imagery. And so it's been around since the beginning of time, erotica. Right. Culture celebrating sex and having sex for pleasure. So I think that we're at an interesting point in our time, in our lifetime, that it's shifting again. And I hope it's going into a direction of positive, free, open sexuality. A new sexual revolution. I hope that's what this time is about.
I love that.
Talk about menopause a little bit. You were. I'm really curious to hear more. And you were saying that you're not at menopausal age yet, and so you're talking about how people are like, why are you talking about menopause?
Exactly. So I was working with this wonderful doctor, a mainly women's sexual health clinic, and a lot of our clientele were menopausal women. So I started being the spokesperson for the work that we were doing around getting women to find their sexual health, to take care of their bodies at any age. So I didn't know a lot about menopause other than the main things we were doing to treat it, but really started to understand the main issues around it. People aren't talking about it. They're terrified to talk to their doctors, their partners, anyone in their lives about menopause, and it's...
What are the main issues?
There's the physiological changes in menopause. There's the emotional that go along with it. So when a woman starts to lose hormone, her sexuality changes completely. She loses lubrication in the vagina. The vagina can actually become atrophic, which means that it shrinks, making sex extremely painful. And the thing is, there's many different treatment modalities. A lot of the times women will say, I don't want to take hormones. I heard that leads to breast cancer. There's all these myths around menopausal treatment. Yes. Because in the 90s, when a lot of these things came out, they were oral estrogen and different ways to treat it, and now we have so many options. So I became an educator on what are the options. Do you even need hormones? How do you talk to your partner? My husband is tired of being turned down for sex, and I do want to have sex, but it's painful. How do I talk about it? So I became the voice for these women and started doing seminars and conferences about how to talk to your doctors and partners about sex, what to know about menopause, how men can know and be supportive partners in menopause.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, great topic. You know, men need to know about women's anatomy and how their sexual functioning works and what the hormones are and what's actually happening on an anatomical level to her body. So it's not about you being rejected. It's about these changes and how you can be a supportive partner. Emotionally, women will have mood swings and night sweats and all these symptoms during menopause. And for a partner, it may be really challenging. I don't know what's going on. I feel I want to be supportive, but she's pushing me away. And so the education alone for men about knowing the symptoms, the treatments, go to the doctor with your partner. Be there to hold her hand and talk to her about it. Talk about your sex life and what it's going to look like now versus referring to it, it used to be like this. So these are all small tips of ways that men can be more aware and more supportive and more loving to their partner going through the change and transition.
It's amazing how everything to me comes back to curiosity. Just flipping that switch into, instead of, again, assuming things or comparing things or judging things or internalizing it, just getting curious. Like, what's happening over there? What's happening for you? What's happening in your body?
Exactly.
What can our sex look like?
What can we do? Where can we learn? Just getting into the question around things can such a powerful reframe.
Absolutely. I think a lot of men and women and couples need permission, too.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, it's okay for you to have questions about menopause. It is? Great. Well, here's my questions. You actually bridge that big gap between finding that curiosity and getting those questions answered by just saying it's okay. I normalize a lot of it, too.
Yeah.
For every single person that comes through these doors, I say 100% of people will have sexual concerns. All of us, me, you, everyone, will have a sexual issue at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. It's not what we hear. 43% of women have sexual dysfunction or erectile dysfunction. All these really negative diagnoses and identities for concerns around sex, I think, really add to more of the problem and really mute that curiosity.
Yeah.
Oh, now I feel bad about it and I feel self-conscious. So normalizing and giving permission are huge steps to allow people to have that freedom to get the resources they need, to find out more, to explore and discover.
Because even as you're talking about that, I see what's available on the other side for these couples in menopause, the women, and you touched briefly about men's version of menopause, which I do want to hear a little bit about, but I think what I hear too is that what's available on the other side, what's available to be able to have sex that's pleasurable. It doesn't have to all go down the drain because your body's changing or hormones are changing or whatever outside or internal circumstances happening.
Right. I mean,
like, what's available?
The cultural myths too, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, a woman can't menstruate. She's not fertile. Some part of her sexuality is then taken away. Mm-hmm. But I always tell women, it's not a time of endings. It's a time of new beginnings. This is your golden era of sex. This is where you can have sex for pleasure, play, joy. You can really focus on you. Because a woman has to give so much of her identity up to being a wife or a partner or a mother. Mm-hmm. And that's great, and it gives you a lot in your life. But this is a time where it's about, what do I want?
Right.
What are my desires? Yeah. What are my fantasies? And to get in that space with a female client and explore and see her open up and light up around her sexuality, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I love that empowering message around that, because our culture makes it seem like it's an end. Oh, the end is near, and then that's it. But it's actually, there's so many, much possibility, and so many great treatments, holistic, natural.
Yeah.
Just getting to know your body. What does your body need? What does your vagina need? What does your clitoris need? All these different things that we need to know through body awareness and education. But it's a great time for couples. You know, the empty nest syndrome they talk about, when your kids go off to college and you're left alone and a couple doesn't know how to talk, and there's this awkwardness.
It all sounds so dire and depressing and just horrible. No wonder everyone looks at it like, oh God, the end is near. There's just nothing about any of those terms, that time, that would elicit excitement.
Here's another problem. When's the last time you watched TV, a movie, and saw anyone over the age of 50 having sex? We don't see aging bodies engaging in any type of erotic or sexuality.
Right.
Well, and most people's first response is like, you're gross.
Grandma! Yeah, it's terrible. Yes, grandma has sex. And grandpa has sex. And most
studies...
they're
having great sex.
Yes! Are you reading these statistics? It's amazing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, elderly sex going on.
Yeah.
Why not?
We have this idea for a kind of sub-podcast called Sex After 60.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
It really should be discussed, because a lot of that's permission. A lot of aging and older populations need people to say it's okay for you to be sexual.
And for people our age and all ages.
Mm-hmm.
To have that looking forward to kind of mentality.
While we were chatting, as I was setting up, also you said that you told your husband, like, I can't wait until I'm menopausal or something like that.
I know, I'll probably be taking that comment back. But the reason why is because, you know, as women, we have to deal with fertility and menstruation. And, you know, I'm at that age now where it's my fertility window. I'm a woman in my mid-30s, and... Mm. It's about, you know, the end of my fertility and also not wanting to start a family yet. So that's really become a big factor in our sexual lives is preventing pregnancy. And then maybe being at a point soon where we're going to be starting a family. So that's a big obligation outside of the fun, play, pleasure zone because it becomes about something else. Yeah. And so I know that. Looking forward into the future, menopause will then relieve us of all these obligations and responsibilities around sex.
Yeah. Well, and it seems so important, and this is just me kind of imagining and doing a little bit of projecting onto the rest of the world, so I'm going to go ahead and take that liberty. But especially for people who have families and who have kids, that if you also throw into the mix this idea that sex is going to dry up after you hit 50 or whatever... I think for people our age, it's also such an important piece of just like letting ourselves believe that something is possible, that oh, actually, like my intention, my goal, what I get to have is that sex gets to keep getting better and better.
Exactly.
Even up until when I'm 50 and beyond, it gets to keep improving.
It does, and that's what most studies show. Sex improves as we age, and we don't hear that message enough.
I don't think I've ever heard that message.
I have not heard that one.
Like a fine line, sexuality, because you're wiser, you know what you want, you can tell what you want. You've had your bad experiences and those awkward moments, and you're more confident. Mm. There's more sexual self-esteem. Mm. And the other piece, too, is that sexuality never ages. There's this idea that my body's aging, so I'm aging sexually as well. But our sexuality remains young and curious and playful. Mm-hmm. And so that's an important thing that we don't hear, too. Mm-hmm. Just our bodies age. And that's okay. We just have to figure out how to use our bodies at every age.
Get creative.
Outer course. That's what I have my clients focus on, is outer course. If your penis isn't working or your vagina is dry, there's other ways that you can be around. And we have to think outside the box, literally.
Yeah.
Well, so you get our needs met.
A recent interview of ours was with a man who's paraplegic, so he lost his use of his genitals.
Yes, and isn't that fascinating?
He had to totally and his wife.
Rewire.
They both had to totally redefine their relationships to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I mean, sounds like they have an incredible sex life.
Yes, absolutely. And clients look at me with these big eyes when I say, you don't need genitals to have great sex. What?
What?
I call it the peg and hole culture. You know, penis and vagina sex, that's what we're always focused on. Intercourse isn't happening, we're not happy. Mm. So focusing on things outside of intercourse, I mean, you can penetrate many different parts of the body. You can penetrate an armpit if you're curious enough to do so. I mean, it's interesting to ways you can find pleasure and knowing your body. I do body mapping. The whole body is an erogenous zone.
Wow.
Head to toe, you have to identify where you respond to touch and you feel sensation. That's that sexual energy that's going to get built up, and the possibilities are endless if you think about it.
Yeah,
I love that.
God, I feel more hopeful.
Yay!
I'm pretty hopeful.
Are we going to start a group? You know, women waiting to be menopausal.
Well, and so, I mean, I will just confess here. It's usually an offline conversation I have, but I don't have my period. I am one of those anomaly type women that never had my period. Just didn't start. And went to the doctor at 16 to try and figure out what's happening. I thought I was a late bloomer and had to do some surgeries to kind of figure out what happened, but my ovaries just never fully developed, and so that process never started and has not. And for a while I struggled with that. Does this mean I'm not a woman? You know, it could be because so much of that is tied into femininity and identity.
Absolutely.
And oh my gosh, I can't have babies, does that mean I'm not a woman? I can't relate to a lot of women, really. I mean, I would get the, I'm so jealous that you don't have to deal with your period every month.
Well, and that was the thing when we started dating, too. She's like, she was almost kind of holding back in a way, because what if he wants to have kids? I'm not going to be able to do that. Yeah. And I'm like, that sounds great to me, not having kids, right. Not having to worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and it was a question every time I would sit down to have a date. It was the, oh God, when do I need to have the conversation of, I cannot physically have children.
sounds like it's a conversation that should happen later on in the dating, but I kind of got good with having it in the beginning. But in a lot of ways, there is this freedom that I've had, but it has been this kind of journey to, is sex over for me too, air quotes, over for me too, because I heard a lot of those same things. If your hormones aren't working, I'm going to be dry most of the time. And then I'm like, but I don't really have a problem with dryness. What does this mean? And so many things, myths, I think, even as a woman in her 20s and 30s, I was confused.
Yeah, so that confused. Bad information. Yeah. And it's different when you don't have a choice and you have to right. kind of cope with yeah. body acceptance. Mm-hmm. You know, accepting my body yeah. as it is at any age and stage, and this is what it is. Mm-hmm. What I try to do is paint this very unique picture for women of each of us are so individual. Yeah. I mean, this book right here, you can't see it for those listening, but mm-hmm. it's about all the different genital anatomy types. Mm-hmm. And we all as women have such a unique body. Even our genital anatomy types, you know, different size labia and different size clitoral shafts and right. bodies, and all of that affects our sexuality and what we want and desire. So yeah. there's no blueprint. There's no right. one way. We're not an assembly line of women going down and you have your period, you do this, you do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think is great too, kind of circling back to the new generation, is right. that we're kind of getting rid of all these should be's and how to's, and there's so much uniqueness now in that yeah. in diversity, which is what I love.
Right.
I hope that it's so blended at some point that we look back at this era like it was the second Victorian era and we go, remember all those things that we used to say about sex, and we can laugh at it. It's mm-hmm. how bizarre it is, because our new culture will be just so fluid, diverse, and open,
right.
open-minded.
Really honoring the individual and their uniqueness.
Yeah, I'm unique, yeah. you're unique, we're all yeah. unique. Just yeah. because we're women, that doesn't mean anything. We probably have a yeah. million differences between us, and that's the curiosity.
Well, same thing for men, because I think men even more so get lumped into, like, you're a guy.
Oh,
X, yeah. Y, Z,
you have a penis,
ABC,
it gets erect, yeah. that's it.
And just so much of that. And I didn't even realize how much of that was going on, because you see men as well in your practice?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Okay. Just the level of education I've had being with Bob, as he's interviewing men, as he's kind of coming to terms with his relationship to sex and sexuality and all of the messages he heard growing up, I'm like, whoa, man, that's hard. I mean, even last night I was thinking, God, got effed, you know, by just so much of that stigma and yes. socialization.
Yes.
And the adverse reaction for him, because he's like, I'm objectifying women, and I'm over here like, objectify me, but not in a, you know, not in yeah. a...
Well, for so many years, I,
yeah. I'm glad
I wouldn't
you
even,
got permission.
Right.
I kind of went to the opposite end of the extreme, where I wouldn't even let myself look at women because I felt I was objectifying them. And then mm-hmm. Natalie's like,
look at my body! Turn on by me!
You know what, Bob, you're right, though. I mean, women, we have it tough, too, but men definitely have it tougher, because yeah. we're actually given the opportunity to socialize and talk about our feelings around it.
It's like, it's more normal for right. women to talk about this stuff.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. I think
bros don't
like
get together and say, like, yeah.
deficiency with yeah. men as well, yeah. where macho men, sex is this, and there's no emotional component or intimacy development. And I think a lot of men are suffering. I hear yeah. a lot of men suffering from that.
Yeah.
I have these feelings, I have these emotions, I'm so ashamed to express them or talk yeah. about them. Is it wrong that I have them? Is it wrong that I don't want to have sex with a woman on the first date? All
right.
these different things that
oh,
they're
man.
Bringing and challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's great, though, that yeah. they're asking for help and they're wanting to process, but I also think we need more attention on it.
Yeah.
You know, even male sexual abuse, which is something we don't talk about very often, these other areas of our culture that are sort of unknowns or really unfamiliar.
Yeah.
Or even laughed off as
well,
that's not
that
a real thing. It really frustrates me.
I think there's a piece that I perceive where kind of maybe especially in the wake of the feminist movement, where if men are talking about, or if anybody's talking about men and their suffering, that it kind of like, yeah, like if men are suffering, then it minimizes women's suffering. That it's like, if men are having something going on, then it means that it makes women's suffering less valid.
Right.
And that's totally not true, but I feel like there's this idea that is what's going to happen.
Right, and there's still just so much separation, men versus
that's
women.
What I was hearing.
And that's why I think we really need to get over that whole identities of you're just a man and you have a penis and that's all you are. And we have to really expand how we identify ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're not just our gender. We have masculine and feminine aspects, every single one of us, mm-hmm. and the expression of those and how we put those out in our relationships and what we do is just as important. Mm-hmm. And there shouldn't be any shame, and we shouldn't be attacking everyone. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of this attack of, oh, that's not okay, or our views are more important, or you don't have the right to be suffering or complaining, and that's just not okay. Because mm-hmm. we're all one species, we're all humans, and we need to be more supportive mm-hmm. of one another rather than attack. There's a lot of attack going on. You know, even right. feminists and non-feminists and all these different groups, and it's not getting anyone anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right, kind of coming back to the when we were talking about even just during the menopausal situation, just that the permission, the understanding, and the curiosity. It's like, man, if I could just sprinkle those three things on everybody on this planet, not just around sex, but around everything.
Right.
You know,
right.
The permission to feel what you're feeling and to want what you're wanting, the understanding to get that education, the curiosity, just to be able to relate in those ways and have the conversations that people are not having even is, I mean, why we do this work, just right. to have the conversations no one's having.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I'm kind of two opinions on social media. You know, on one way, as a psychologist, I worry about how it's going to drastically change our social right. relationships. But then on the other hand, it really does what you're doing. It does sprinkle out all that curiosity and that permission, and it gets people talking. And I think that's why the younger generation is so much more open around their sexuality. They have social media, and they have all these outlets and ways to get their voice out, to be heard, and, you know, there's positive and negative aspects of everything, but I think it definitely has the platform to do what we want it to do, and as educators, we can use that to really help start the conversation.
I want to go back and throw this in there just in case somebody was interested. Is this the book that you're talking?
Yes. So two wonderful, amazing books by a good friend of mine, Mookie Okon. Mm-hmm. And one is called The Feminine, and the other is Masculine Power. And they're the most gorgeous artistic books. You can actually probably order them on her website.
And it's spelled Mukeeokan.
Yes. Yes. And her tagline is, an orgasm's best friend. She's really amazing. Wonderful educator.
Yes. So, yes. And the one book, Masculine Power, and the other book is The Beauty of the Feminine.
The Beauty of the Feminine. And what these books are representations of real people, real humans' anatomy, and the variation of it. And then she's done this beautiful photography of natural objects in nature that look very similar to genitalia. So it's just a beautiful book. They're wonderful coffee table books for the holidays.
For when the family
maybe
comes
not,
over.
But yes.
It'll be a great topic of conversation at Thanksgiving and Christmas.
But they're great. Great. If you're an educator or if you're curious or anyone, you definitely want to look at these books. They really help just kind of awareness and knowing that no body is built alike. Mm-hmm.
Oh, speaking of books, I do have a quick question before we dive into a little bit of what you do and all that. And I know it's hard because I see the size of your library.
Don't ask me my favorite book.
Well, not the favorite. Okay, I'll reframe it. It's not favorite, but more kind of your top three recommendations for someone that's wanting to begin their exploration or understanding of sex and sexuality.
Ah, great question. Well, there's a new book out that I fell in love with by a colleague of mine, Chris Donahue, called Sex Outside the Lines.
Ooh, okay.
And that's a wonderful book. And the reason why I like it, it talks about our sexually dysfunctional culture.
Okay.
And all of these things that we can do to get good information and to understand how our culture is impacting
that's good.
Sexuality. Mm-hmm. So that's a great, great book.
Yeah.
For some of the older favorites, I love A New View on Women's Sexuality. It's a book on women's sexuality by the Feminist Federation. And it has wonderful drawings, these beautiful pencil drawings of female anatomy. And everything from menstruation to birth control to understanding Every Aspect of Sexual Health.
I love that.
It's a great book, and it's one of those books where you look at it and you go, wow, I haven't seen this information anywhere. And that's why I want to mention the name of it and to get that book.
Cool.
And some of my other favorites are probably some of the books on sexuality and spirituality. Yes. Another topic I'm very, very interested in. Sex and the Soul. Gina Ogden's books are definitely great. Women Who Love Sex and The Return of Desire.
Okay.
And of course, one of my favorite people, Betty Dodson. I just think she was such a powerful influencer on women's sexuality. Her book, Sex for One. Sex for Two, great books on self-pleasure, which is a really big component of my practice, is helping people engage their bodies for self-pleasure and sexual health. So she has a great how-to and things to know.
Cool, I love that.
Yeah. Can you tell the listener how they can find out more about you and your work? And a little bit about, you've gone over it a tiny bit, but who do you work with also?
Yes, so I'm a clinical psychologist in private practice, but I'm also the director of the SHAPE Center here in Los Angeles, which is a new center, sexual health and pleasure enhancement, and I have two wonderful colleagues that I work with, Dr. Patty Britton and Dr. Robert Dunlap, who are sex coaches and world-renowned sex educators. Mm. And what we do in our practice is basically educate workshops, trainings, lectures on sexual health and wellness from all different avenues. So we will do everything from show a great film on sexuality to a lecture on awakening libido and desire to groups for females, males, and others around what you need to know about sex. So that's what we do here, and we really want to get the message out for sex positivity, sex education. I also do WISE programs, Women's Integrative Sex Education, which are really about bringing in the toys and devices, but also the real conversations around what we need to know about our sexuality. Mm-hmm. And hopefully starting that for males soon, because I get a lot of men going, we want to go to the female workshop. And I go, that's great to know, because we want to do one specifically for men on what to know about female sexuality, for heterosexual males, that is. So that would be something that we would be offering soon.
Cool.
Stay tuned. You can go to my website, which is www.drshannonchavez.com.
Okay. Cool.
Wonderful.
We have a couple questions to wrap it up.
Great.
You go first.
Okay. What is your favorite thing about sex?
My favorite thing about sex is probably how diverse it is and how shocking. You know, you can always find new things that really arouse and excite and shock. And I'll just give you one example of the new thing that I'm into that I went, ooh, this is really shocking and interesting and fascinating. It's called Zente, and it comes out of Japan. And it's a very interesting sexual practice where you're fully in Lycra, full on, fully covered head to toe, and there's all these different bonding and caressing, sensual. It's very sensual, so I think it's a very fascinating aspect of what people are doing and practicing. There's erotica around it, there's acts in parties, and all these events around it. So, Zente, Google it. Very fascinating.
How do you spell it?
Zentai.
Okay.
So, yeah, I emailed my colleague and I said, what is this? And we actually saw a clip on it in a SAR that I co-facilitated. Uh-huh. So it's a new thing, and it's just, again, shocking and fascinating. That's what I love about sex. Never a dull day.
Yeah. Like, I never get bored of my job.
Nothing fails to surprise, right? Yeah.
I love it.
And how would you describe sex to somebody who's never had it before?
Sex to someone who's never had it before, it's playful, fun, erotic adventures. And that can be anything. Notice I didn't say intercourse. Activity and play. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Adventure, activity,
erotic.
Play, erotic. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for getting together with us today.
Thank you so much. This was great. Yeah. I enjoyed both of you so much.
Yay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Chavez.
Welcome to the end of the episode.
Right? Wasn't she amazing? Just so well-knowledged, well-versed, and makes sex fun and normal.
Yeah. One thing that we've heard back from some listeners is that they have had a lot of fun and opened a lot between them and their partner, the person that they're with. And if you listen to this by yourself and you have a special somebody to listen to this with, we want to recommend that you sit down sometime and put on an episode of Sex the Podcast. We've just heard some really cool stories about conversations and awarenesses and just deeper connection that has been opened up simply by sitting down and listening to an episode.
Yeah, it gives you such a great jumping off point to have these conversations that might normally be a little challenging to have, or you might not know where to start. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great way to develop that intimacy and communication and honesty with your partner, to talk about needs and wants and curiosities. And inevitably, you're going to have better sex because of it. Just saying.
So pick your favorite episode and sit down with your person and listen to a conversation about sex, and then have some good sex. We would love that.
Yeah, and last but not least, if you're hearing this and you're not on the Sex the Podcast website, head on over to sexthepodcast.com, hop on the newsletter, and that way you can be the first to know about future episodes and blog posts and videos and all around sexy goodies that we want to provide to our audience.
If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes, we would love it if you took a few moments and gave it a rating. That will help other people be able to find it more easily. And we want more people to hear it. We want more people to have better sex. And just take a couple moments. We would really appreciate it.
AKA, if you love sex and you want to have good sex and you want the world to have good sex, please leave a rating on iTunes. That would really, really help other people learn how to have great sex too.
The background music was provided by bensound.com, and we will see you next time.
Adios, amigos.
Stay sexy.